You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Ellen O'Neill with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I know that sounds strange. Sita is on vacation with all of her friends and family down in Trinidad and Tobago this weekend. So Allie and I get to run the show today.
Yay, that's us.
I know, it is us. So Allie Tambor, one of my besties and resident guest here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are community radio here, heard here on 1510 WWBC. 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7 all over Brevard County, a little bit of West Orlando, and the tips of Indian River and Volusia County as well. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. It's going to be a great show today. We had, all of us were just talking about what a great weekend that we had, and we're excited about sharing the airwaves today with another best friend of mine, Mr. Richard Whitney, the owner and operator of B&R Construction Services of Brevard. And we're going to be talking about some of the projects that he has going on and a little bit about remodeling and construction here in Brevard County. Of course, we're both Brevard County residents, all three of us Brevard yep. County residents. And Danny, our programmer here, is all Brevard County residents, and we just love this county so much. And a lot of us have been here for decades, right? Rich, how long have you been in Brevard?
34 years now.
34. Yeah, and Allie, yeah. You're a transplant, yeah, but you've been here for a while.
Wait, 15 maybe?
15 or 20,
about,
yeah.
I'm a native Floridian, but about 15 years.
I've been here since 1988 and been in Palm Bay most of that time, so I've always been part of the city and the things that are going on and all of the great stuff that's going on here in our community. So it's been a great ride. I mean, I love Brevard County and all of that it has to offer. And I'm excited to talk to you, Rich, about construction in Brevard, because I know we always talk about affordable housing. You know, that's always seems to be a topic here on the show. Sita is a big community advocate in general, just for everyone, not just because of community housing, but that's always been a big topic of conversation. And being in the construction business, obviously you've been seeing a lot of building and things that are going on and the growth. And if you've been here 30 years, you've seen the growth of Palm Bay.
Well, when we moved here, Jupiter Road didn't go through and Mitten Road stopped at the end of... Right at the end of, I guess it would be Malabar Road, right by Malabar Road it used to end. And then we watched them actually cut through Jupiter Road. It was pretty, it's been a journey for sure.
Yeah.
Without exactly. a doubt. I mean, I love Palm Bay. I was part of their, I'm part of their construction advisory board, just, you know, trying to get involved and make it a better city.
It's fantastic. And we're going to have Greg Caporel, who's the deacon on the finance council with St. Joseph's Chapel, which is one of the only, if not the only, historical
residence in Palm Bay.
That is so cool. And where is it located?
It's right on Miller Street, which is right at the end of Palm Bay Road, right before the annex. What used to be Molly Mutt's, I think it still is.
Yeah.
And right after Al's Trophy, which used to be Al's Trophy. There's a little cemetery there, and it's actually a small little chapel, and it's...
Oh.
It's so beautiful when you look at every, I'm a construction nut anyway, because it's what I've done my whole life. And it's just amazing, some of the things when you pull down the walls, just looking how they were able to make it last 114 years, or, you know, I mean, almost 110 years, 111 years. Right. Just been crazy.
1912, right?
Yeah, well, the church was actually... built in 1914 is when it was blessed and, you know, became the actual church for the city. And like I said, Greg knows more. Greg is like the master historian when it comes to this church. He knows every little thing, how they used to, back in the day, they used to barge down the river, down the Indian River, and pull in right at the end right there, right in the cove, and that's how they got to church, or they'd walk, or take
a
horse.
Oh, that is a cove right there, right by Waterway Park, right? Isn't it Waterway Park?
Waterway Park, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
my
gosh,
I didn't know that was the reason.
That's why all that section right there, and it's just amazing. We have a pew, the original pew that was in that church in 1914. One of the owners, one of the original builders, his daughter has it. And it's just, oh my goodness gracious, it's so uncomfortable.
Right. Well, because people were smaller then, right? So they have a little less butt.
I'm a larger guy, as you can tell. Yeah. So sitting on that, and they used to go to church from 8 in the morning until 8 at night.
Ugh.
And they would double up. You know, they'd go and they'd have lunch, and it wasn't
dinner on the ground.
Exactly. It was, you know, and they would do that, and they would be there all day long, and just community. And that's the thing that I love about it, is the history of the church and all the stuff that church has seen. It's just amazing. I mean, like I said, Greg knows so much more about this. I mean, I've been finding stuff out from Greg. He tells me everything that's going on. He's like, hey, do you remember? Yes, this is this. And it's just amazing how he's so knowledgeable about everything in that church.
Well, and we will get him on the line here in just a minute. I think he's trying to call in now. But let's tell our listeners a little bit about the difference, because it takes a different type of general contractor when you're doing remodels, when you're doing restoration.
Okay.
So.
All right. So a remodel is.
Like, you're not remodeling
upgrade.
That church.
No. And Greg was very clear about this.
Right.
We started off with a patch. It started off as a 3-foot patch. And Greg loved what we did. And he said, well, hey, I'd like you guys to do a restoration on the bell tower, which was amazing. So mm-hmm. much knowledge. I found out so much about the bell itself, where it was forged. We actually took it back to Ohio to have it re-blasted and chrome and painted and done. It was just an amazing adventure, that was. And when we did it, we had to make it to code so it would stand up. We had to put these brackets in, and Greg was not a happy person putting the brackets in. And he explained to me the difference between a remodel and a restoration, mm-hmm. and he was very clear and poignant about it.
So what are some of the challenges with the restoration, though? You've got to look for old. Obviously, you got to look for old stuff.
Well, actually, there's a couple of companies in Brevard that really are amazing. They are able to reproduce exactly what we've been able to find. Like, I'll bring them a product. I'll bring them something from 1914. I'll say, do you know where to get this? And they've been fantastic. I mean, they've actually made the floor, which it's hard to make a 114-year-old floor.
Yes.
So they've found those places. And it's just been a great journey to see all the places you can get and all the stuff you can get. But you're right, Ellen. You have to be, Greg says this all the time, you have to be period correct.
Yes.
Because we're actually bringing the church back to 1923. Because I'll let Greg tell you, but they actually cut the church in a section and moved it 14 feet and made it 14 feet longer back in the 20s. And it's amazing. They actually, it's so weird. You can see the line that they cut in the floor, and they just took it and grew it 14 feet and then put it back together. And it was like, wow, it's just amazing. Some of the stuff they were able to do.
That's such a bold decision.
And in 1923, you didn't have a whole lot of crane, and everything was done by hand. And it was it's amazing the stuff they were able to do and it's a lost art.
Yes.
As a construction person, it's amazing to see some of the work that was done and how beautifully it was done and how much care and time they took into doing things.
Well, and when I'm from New Jersey and New York area, and I love St. Patrick's Cathedral. That's my favorite church in the whole world. I've been to so many. Been to Montreal. I've been to almost every state in the Union. I've seen whatever beautiful cathedral that they've had, right? when I walked in to the St. Joe's, I called it the cathedral for a long time because it reminded me so much of the inside of a popular cathedral that I had seen somewhere in the United States. And a good friend of ours, actually, Gregory Pistorius, passed away not that long ago, and his funeral was there. And I felt so, like, connected because the Pistorius family had always had that connection to New York as well. And we were so close at that time. And I kept telling Rory, I was like, you could have not found a better place to hold this great memorial for your brother, because this, it was just amazing. And the fact that it was Palm Bay history as well. And of course the Pistorius family, they've been around here for a while too, even though they were in New York and Miami for a long time, but they had settled here and got a lot of, so that whole, and I'm Catholic, so like the Catholicism, I just felt it dripping in there. It was like amazing, such an amazing experience. And when, of course, that's around the time that you were in talks of doing the renovations and some of the renovations. So I was sitting in there like a little proud peacock going, yep, that's my friend going to be doing the renovations in here. But again, had such a connection, not just with the church, with the families that had been there before. You could just kind of feel the ghosts, if you will.
That's exactly, you know, what you feel when you walk into the chapel. Feel those.
The history.
Yeah, and it's so touching. It is so touching.
Yeah, and I believe we have Greg on the phone that can join us in this fantastic conversation about St. Joseph's Chapel.
Yes, you do. Good morning.
Greg.
Or actually, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Caporal, is that correct?
No, it's pronounced Caporal.
Caporal. Okay, so Greg Caporal is on the line with us here, and you are the Deacon of Finance and on the Council with St. Joseph's Chapel?
Yeah, I used to be employed at St. Joseph Catholic Church as a director of operations. I'm an ordained deacon in the Diocese of Orlando. Right now, I do serve on the Finance Council, but primarily as the historian for the Miller Street Chapel. I seem to be the one that has the most knowledge of the building, its history, how it was constructed. And so I've been advising as this restoration process has been undergoing.
So tell us a little bit. So, you know, we were kind of like armchair quarterback in the history, just from the things that we know. And of course, Rich and I have both been Palm Bay residents for 30 plus years and have always had a fondness for the chapel. So tell us a little bit about the history and how you got involved and how you learned all the history about it.
Well, actually, for me, the history started probably around 2009, 2010. I was looking on Facebook, and I saw someone had made a model of this little church. And it was fascinating because the roof came off and you could look at everything inside. And I was just fascinated by that, but I had no idea where it was. Didn't know what Palm Bay was. I lived in Tampa at the time. And so later when I moved over to that, you know, to the East Coast, to the Palm Bay, Melbourne area, and I saw the church, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the church I saw on Facebook. And that really, that for me, that started my interest in it, because I just love architecture, especially liturgical church architecture. And so I started learning everything I could about the church, you know, going all the way back really to the founding of Palm Bay, back to the 1870s.
What used to be called Tillman, correct?
Yes, it used to be Tillman. So, and just real quick, what happened? So you had three gents from Quitman, Georgia, and they had bought a 75-acre tract of land along the Indian River, and their intent was to develop it as citrus groves. So this actually happened in 1870. They had built a warehouse and docks on what we know of today as Castaway Point, and that's where they would load their citrus products onto boats and then be shipped to northern markets. So one of the three guys, his name was John Tillman, and he petitioned the U.S. Postal Service to establish a post office. And this was done in 1887, and they gave the town the name of Tillman after him. So it was the town of Tillman, grand total population, about 40 people.
Wow.
So
a metropolis.
So Tillman, I'm sorry?
A metropolis.
A metropolis, indeed. So Tillman and his partners were in business for about 30 years, and then the land was purchased by the Florida Indian River Catholic Colony. And this was it was actually a North Dakota company. In 1911, the state of Florida issued them a permit to do business. And so what they had done was they advertised all through the Midwest, targeting farmers, saying, hey, we've got cheap land down here. You can produce two crops annually. So families started arriving from the Midwest, specifically Indiana, Wisconsin, Kansas, and Oklahoma. And the Catholic company had bought a huge chunk of land. It was about 6 miles from south to north. And as these families arrived, they distributed them through this area. But when the families arrived, they found that things weren't really as advertised. The soil was sandy. It didn't drain well. Turkey Creek would often flood. And really, their intent to plant vegetables that they were accustomed to planting up, you know, in the north, wouldn't grow down here. It was really restricted to citrus. So this is like 1912. And the amazing thing, it's a Catholic company, but there was no church. Hmm. And so the Catholic company did build a church, but it was only used maybe once or twice because it was in a remote location. Nobody could get to it because really the only roads were Malabar Road, Palm Bay Road, and Route 1, and all of them were dirt, just dirt tracks. So the Catholic families now, by 1914, numbering about 100, they built their own church. And that's the church that we're actually doing the restoration on. It was originally named, you know, St. Joseph Church, and it retained that name until they built the new church over on Babcock Street in 1982. And now we refer to it as the St. Joseph Chapel, or you'll also hear Miller Street Church.
Right. And a huge cemetery there as well. I know that there was the first six Rich was telling me about. He was telling me about the story about the first six grave sites that you all either discovered or found.
Yeah. So the cemetery kind of wraps around the church, and it didn't start out that way. The cemetery was actually across the street to the west of the church. Right behind the church is a road, Lichty Road. And that's where the cemetery originally was. And they had actually several burials over there, but the ground was really swampy. And so in 1926, they made the decision to disinter the bodies and bring them over to where the current cemetery currently is. The problem was they told the families, if you want to move your loved one, you have to do the disinterment. And so there were actually seven bodies that were left on that side of the road. And currently there's a chain link fence that surrounds that area. It's protected.
But so much history. And I remember as a kid even, because again, Rich and I were just talking, I'm from the New York, New Jersey area in general. And we had a cemetery, like kind of a community cemetery, if you will. And I remember going and, you know, doing the whole pencil thing that you go up to the stone and get the, you know, the years and so forth. And to see the history, and specifically here in Palm Bay, you know, for us, to see the history dating back to the 1900s is just always so cool. And once again, you want to get into the families and what they did here. I know O'Galley had a whole pineapple farm. Yeah. Like, so there's such a great history here in Brevard, and just in general, for the first settlers and some of the history that we've had in moving, like even Green Gables. But Green Gables is in Melbourne, right? This is the only marker in Palm Bay, right? Is this the only historical marker in Palm Bay?
Yes, this is the only nationally recognized historical site in the city of Palm Bay. It's on the National Register of Historic Places.
Wow. And so who were the settlers that came here? You said a lot of folks from the Midwest, but I was reading on the website that there was a lot of German and Slovak, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Slovaks.
Yeah. who settled here. So how did you get any history, like, of how those folks came?
Yeah, so, you know, they were all encouraged to come down, and they were really disappointed at what they were actually encountering when they arrived. I had the privilege of doing an interview with the son of one of the original settlers. And I did this interview back in September of 2018. He was an altar boy at the church, the Miller Street Chapel, in the 1930s. And the stories he told were fascinating. He said they got down here, and again, the roads are dirt and they're really just tracks. They had started to spray tar on Route 1, but it was still just dirt underneath the liquid tar. And he said, really, to get anywhere was incredibly difficult. And so one of the problems they experienced, he was telling me, was just hordes of mosquitoes. He said they would light bonfires in the fields at night so the cows could gather around them, because the fire, the flames would keep the mosquitoes off the cows. And he said it wasn't until World War II when the Navy came in, you know, because Melbourne Airport, Valcaria, those were all Navy landing strips during World War II. And he said they would come in and spray DDT. And he said all of us kids would run outside because, hey, it's raining, you know, and the DDT is falling on them. But he said that was the first time they got actual control of the mosquito issue. But, you know, by the 30s, of course, now automobiles and things are moving along quite well. When you read the history of when they dedicated the church in 1914, all of the people came by horse or horse-drawn wagon, and in some instances took 7 to 8 hours to get to the church.
Wow.
Now, Greg, if I remember right, you were telling me they used to come down the Indian River in a barge, and they would load up and then pull into the canal right there, right into the cove. And they would, that's a lot of them, that's how they got as well. They got there through the river.
Yes, yeah, coming via river. In fact, the first priest who serviced the Catholic colony would come from either St. Augustine or Fort Pierce, and they would come either by boat or by horse. And later, of course, as automobiles, you know, came into being. But that's how they originally came there. And then you would have parishioners coming from the Melbourne area, O'Galley. And even one of the former pastors told me they even came from Fort Pierce, because really this was the only Catholic church servicing that entire area.
It is amazing history. And right here, once again, right here in Palm Bay, you know, in our, well, of course we're in Cocoa right now. We're in Cocoa, yeah. Florida right now, but Palm Bay is home to all of us. So I love the history of all of our whole area anyway. I always have. And being there since 1988, I've seen a lot of the changes that have happened in Palm Bay. As a matter of fact, it's, you know, one of the, I think it's the third biggest city, yes, in the state of Florida.
Yeah,
one of the,
actually just, it was just named number one for new home buyers. As a matter of fact, it was just, that was, I get, being on the council and stuff for Palm Bay, I get all the newsletters from them, and they just won that award that they are the number one city in the country for new home purchases.
That's right. And I don't know what the census is at St. Joe's Catholic Church, but I go there during the week, 8:30 mass, two or three times a week, actually. Right there on Babcock, and I'm always impressed with how many people are there sitting with me at 8:30 in the morning. So I know that Palm Bay.
Well,
is,
you would see Greg there.
Actually, yeah, I'm sure I have. But in 2020, the population was 119,000 people in Palm Bay, which in the city of Palm Bay, I know. And I believe recently it was like up to 180,000.
Yeah, it's just
people.
Been crazy.
So what are some of the services that the chapel is providing for? And certainly through the renovation, I'm sure that there's been closures, you know, to
absolutely
try and get some things done. But what are some of the things, like I said, I think when you were first on the phone, within the last 3 or 4 years, I was at a family funeral there and was just so impressed with the decor and everything inside just brought me right back to my roots, like right back to my Catholic roots. So what are some of the things that are going on at the chapel?
So right now, the chapel, it serves primarily for funerals, weddings, and then in November, All Souls Day, and then usually in May for Memorial Day. They'll have a mass. They'll have some sort of, you know, recognition for veterans and for the deceased of the wars. So that's its primary purpose. It only holds 150 people, whereas the main church, the main St. Joseph over on Babcock Street, will hold up to about 900. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, they built a new church in 1982 because they just completely outgrew the little chapel. At one point, I think I read where they had somewhere between 5 and 9 masses on a weekend just to accommodate the number of people. And one of the things that we learned and what we've seen in the construction is they actually expanded the church once. Back in 1926-27, they literally just cut the back end of the church off and pushed it back about 20 feet and added a 20-foot section into the church. And when you look at the floor and the walls, you can actually see where the cuts were made.
That's so cool.
That's what I was telling them.
So here's my vision, if you could take this back to whoever needs to hear it. I say we sell tickets to Midnight Mass because I would love – I've been waiting for a midnight mass to come to that chapel ever since I've lived here. I've been there, like I said, for a few services, different services, but like because it's only 150 seats, this way it would raise money for the Catholic services, for the cemetery, for maybe the upgrades. So if I could put a plug in, that's my plug, is I would love to have a midnight mass there, and I would pay whatever it would need to be paid to go.
As Greg knows, we have
found... It has to be in Latin, though, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So that might be a little extra challenge, but whatever.
A little extra, yeah. But I think they can find someone that speaks that, you know,
yes.
I'm pretty sure. But as Greg and I have done the restoration, which it is a restoration, right, Greg, not a remodel?
Yeah, it's a restoration. We're guided by federal and state guidelines. So because the building's on the National Register and because they accepted federal funds back in the 1980s, we are very strictly governed on what we have to do. And the bottom line is, if something exists there that was original, then you have to restore it to that original configuration using original type materials. If it was something that was added later, then you have to remove that. So that's what we encountered right away, because the historic period is 1914 to 1927. And 27 was set because they wanted to include that extension, that addition that they put on the church. So we are taking everything back to the way it appeared between 1914 and 1927. And again, like we could have used drywall. Normally that's what you would use, but because that's not what they used back then Rich and his crew put up lath strips and put plaster over them just like they did in 1914.
Yes, well, we did.
Yeah, and I lived in a house in New Jersey that was built in 1898, and I remember my dad, and of course he wasn't restoring, he was remodeling at that point, but I remember those lath strips. I mean, that was a pretty common building construction back then.
Yeah.
So are you for tours and stuff, is there an availability for people to learn the history and to go visit the chapel and learn more about the history and about Palm Bay or about the settlers that are in the cemetery right now?
Yeah. Right now there's nothing formal set up. When I was an employee, if people called, I would give them a tour. I would walk them through the history. What I intend to do is gather up all of the knowledge that I have accrued over the last, well, now 8 years. And I want to write, basically publish a book that has all the photos, that covers everything, some of the original documents, everything that I've acquired on it. And put that together in a book, one of those where you can send it out and just have it printed. I'm not trying to actually get professionally published.
Well, Greg,
so we would have something to give to people.
Well, actually, we can discuss that with Ellen because she is a phenomenal publicist.
Yeah, we can. We definitely. I'd love to be part of that project to help you out and make that happen, make that part of a reality. And again, it's a print-on-demand type of thing, so we'll talk about that later. But
yeah.
But that would be a great history for Palm Bay because, again, I hear all the time, you know, sort of now, you know, the modernization of Palm Bay. Not everybody's happy because we're all, you know, there's 180,000 of us and you're not going to make everybody happy. But with all of the new construction and all of the building that's going on right now, to be able to preserve a piece of this history in Palm Bay is so crucial to, you know, just for everyone to be able to kind of tap back into an area that maybe people don't even realize what the settlers and what the people did, what their vision was of Palm Bay. And again, I know that the city council and the city government in general of Palm Bay has not always been the best, you know, but for one reason or another. But bottom line is that I love Palm Bay. I love our little town, and I love the fact that we have this much history in it. So thank you so much for bringing this back and for preserving this section of Palm Bay, and certainly for St. Joseph's Chapel. Any parting words? We're going to take a brief minute to listen to our sponsors, but I want to make sure that we get everything in about the chapel that you'd like to make sure that our listeners know about. Greg?
If they have a chance to go by the chapel, it's the address is 1422 Miller Street. They can take a look at it. If somebody's there, I'm sure they would, you know, let them in. And of course, if I'm there, I will give them the historical tour. If folks do want to contribute to the restoration, they're welcome to contribute, check, money order. They would need to send it to the main church at 5330 Babcock Street Northeast, and that's in Palm Bay. And write it. The check or make it out to St. Joseph Catholic Church, but please make sure in the memo section they specify Miller Street Chapel to make sure it goes into the right account.
Excellent. And we'll make sure that all of our listeners, we post all of this on all of our social media as well as our website, and we'll make sure we get that out to everyone. And of course, if you want to get some pictures, I just happen to look it up online under Catholic cemeteries in general. There is a page specifically for St. Joseph Cemetery and more information that you'd be able to receive about this great historic little area. But right now, Greg, thank you so much for coming in. And you weren't here in person, but thank you so much for calling in and being a part of our show today and educating us about this great little historical piece. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quickly here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll be right back right after these messages.
Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9. Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, listeners, to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We are having a fantastic conversation with Rich Whitney, the president and CEO of B&R Construction Services of Brevard, and with Greg Caparel, he's the deacon and finance counsel at St. Joe's. We're really going to... We're talking about St. Joe's the first part of the show. We're going to get into construction a little bit because it seems like Palm Bay is just booming with construction, not just renovations and restorations, but with remodels for sure. And I want to get into, because I know a lot of people are out there either. We've been talking about the housing crisis for a long time, and every time I drive down the street, it seems like there's another apartment building going up or another housing development being built. Did you see the new one on Babcock right behind the, right across from Tibbetts Lumber?
Yeah.
They just cleared all that out to make another 300 or 400 houses back in there. And so the construction service industry seems to be going pretty well in general.
It is. It's, again, I'm not real thrilled with the amount of, you know, apartments going in there.
Of course.
Because it's infrastructure. I'm all about construction. So I look at every point. Mm-hmm. And being on the construction advisory board for Palm Bay, it was infrastructure, the MLE and stuff which we call the MLE, which is a mainline extension, which brings it all the way through. And that wasn't done, but it is now. And they're trying to keep up with the infrastructure. It's difficult. Palm Bay's got a great city council. I got to tell you, they really look at the aspects of everything, where a couple of the other cities didn't quite catch up to the growth. You know, they're running into, like, I'd say water pressure issues. Yeah. So it's tough because you have to have what we call substations, which pump the water back up to the right pressure. So when you, in your 922,614 new apartment buildings, you got to have all that water. And now all that water has to come from somewhere, and all that has to have pressure because, you know, it starts off with pressure. But if you're going 6 miles down the road, you lose a lot of pressure. And they've been pretty good about it. They've been able to keep the infrastructure going good. Now we just got to worry about the roads.
Well, and again,
that's scary.
Yeah, well, 30-plus years of us being here, we've seen the ups and downs. And, of course, when you're trying to accommodate 180,000 people, not everybody's going to be happy always. But in the general sense, I agree with you that I think that Palm Bay does a great job of thinking about the citizens and thinking about the areas that they are promoting and that they are trying to bring more revenue and more conscious effort, if you will, to the building that they're doing.
It is the biggest struggle for, I think, Palm Bay is we're known as a residential community because we don't have a lot of commercial per se business. We have more residential, and it's hard to do tax revenue because of commercial properties generate tax revenue.
Yeah.
Where residentials, you know,
we don't have any. Yeah, we very know, little.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I know. I always already, look at my tax bill and I go, "Wow, is that it? Really?"
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think many people say that anymore.
Exactly. So it's a struggle. Like I said, Palm Bay's done really well. They have their structures. They have their issues. You know, back in the Bayside Lake area where, you know, the roads are a little rough, and you know, there's a few areas where they're struggling, but you don't realize the depth of and how deep Palm Bay goes back there. There's a lot of places that haven't been built out, and there's a lot of places that have too much building out.
So the challenges with construction, especially when there's new construction and so much new construction, is a company that specializes in remodeling and restoration, you got a few years, right? It's a cycle of things.
It is a cycle.
So
exactly.
So you'll have like, what's the average now? 7 years that somebody moves out of a house, right?
I think so.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it's really
So when you're, I love the fact that you're in with the St. Joseph's Chapel and doing the restoration, because that is like.
It's a, like you said, it's a whole different animal, and it's amazing. And Greg has been a plethora of knowledge. I mean, first teaching me about Catholicism and the right terminology, which has been a lesson in itself,
yeah.
You know, because I'm Pentecostal, so it's a little different, you know.
Just a different book.
Same book, different words.
That's right. So, different chapters.
Same guy. So yeah. We're good with that. But no, restorations and remodels are totally different. And the remodels I love doing because you get to make, and I'm more of the woman side of it because it's so pleasurable to watch the joy in a woman's heart when you redo her kitchen and you make her vision. I tell everybody, this is exactly your vision. I'm only here to make it come true. Because, you know, my company will not pick colors.
Right.
Tell everybody. Right. New colors ever. What do you think? I think it's your vision. You know, and we
so with restoration, as Greg said in the first segment, it's really about looking at those period pieces, right, and making sure that you have the exact replica, if you will, of making that so that that period stays true, right?
Exactly.
In remodels, what are you seeing now? Like, as people are seeing new construction?
A lot of white and grays.
Really?
A lot of white. Everybody's going white, and it's kind of white shaker. They call it white shaker. And a lot of the grays and bigger tile is definitely coming out now. The bigger the better, they say. Mm-hmm. And there's just some beautiful things out there right now. I mean, some of the products that they've come out with are amazing. It's just, you can do so much on a remodel now. And again, as we talked earlier, you have to be careful because you can go from a $10,000, $15,000 bathroom remodel to a $50,000 bathroom remodel in a blink of an eye, and you didn't realize you spent that much.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I mean, you have to be, this is what I tell everybody, you have to be budget conscious. When you're doing a project, you have to be budget conscious. So when you hire a contractor, make sure he understands and he breaks down everything for you. If he's giving you just a general price, ask him for more. And if he says, I don't give more, find a new contractor. Mm-hmm. Because as a consumer, you need to know what you're getting for what you're paying. Because a lot of the places just do builder grade stuff. Right. And if that's what you're looking for, great. That's not a problem. But if you're expecting a higher grade quality for what you think you're getting for price-wise, Be buyer beware. It's really what it is. Be focused on what you want and stay true to your budget. And ask your contractor, will this cost me more if I go upgrade this? And before you make that choice, find out what it is. Because as you said,
the builder grade model is designed to last 7 years.
Yeah.
7 to 10 years, because that's what they
exactly what
acknowledge the fact that that's how many people move in and out. like you move in. So that's, I firmly believe that's why water heaters only last 10 years. That's why like so many things have changed, because yeah. that's kind of what's been happening anyway, is that that's everybody exactly moves right. out and moves in and then gets new stuff. Right.
Exactly right. Whenever, when you look at a house, you're already looking at what you can do to it. 90% of the people go in and they say, well, it's got good bones. Everybody says it's got good bones. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's got good bones, but does it have good product with it? If you're going to upgrade, really, really look at what you're upgrading, because there's so many choices and there's so many different choices out there. There's so much you can do, and just be aware of what you're going to get for the money that you're asking for. Because like I said, you can go from a $20,000 remodel to a $50,000 remodel in a blink of an eye.
So what are the rooms that add the most value? So let's kitchen. Say you have a two. Okay.
Don't even go any further. Right kitchen. There. Kitchens okay. and bathrooms. Yeah, that's okay. what we specialize in. And that's where you get the most value for a resale. Because mm-hmm. A lot of the times, we call it dated. When you walk into a kitchen and you see the wooden cabinets with the Formica tops, or, you know, the little things that kind of date it, the colors and stuff like that. And when you upgrade, when you remodel, you're looking to bring it to date. And the biggest thing I can tell somebody is, don't do what everybody else is doing, because in 10 years, it's going to be out of style again. And that's the average. Ellen, you're right, with 7 years, 7 to 10 years, you're already looking for another remodel. So when you're doing that, it's hard, because you want to do what the Joneses are doing, everybody says.
Oh, terrazzo floors.
Right.
Bingo.
Pinterest.
know? Pinterest. It's certain things. Be true to what you are. You know, if you like pink, make it pink. If you like blue, make it blue. Don't go what everybody else is going, because it's going to be your house. And in 10 years, it still might be your house.
And, well, I was going to say, and typically people that remodel, or that are remodeling on a schedule, if you will, for lack of a better word, like every 7 to 10 years, that they do a fairly decent remodel on the home, right? Mm-hmm. That usually involves repairing things. That usually involves fixing things that may have broken that you may not have been realized, but it also involves the fashion. So when you say things like people going with gray and white, I always think that because handles are easy to switch out, and
amazing what that will do,
right? Just to get a just to do handles differently. And I think that's why we got away from, I was a kitchen designer for Home Depot for 5 or 6 years prior to being in management with them. And I remember people would come in and they'd say, I want this exact kitchen, but I just want it in blah. You know, like they would say that they wanted it. And all I would do is change out the handles, and it would be $200 versus $3,000 or $5,000. And it really gave the same effect and the same thing. And then why I think we got away from Formica cabinets. Remember those old Formica cabinets with the yep. poles on the bottom?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's why we got away from them, because they were not adjustable to be able to upgrade with simple. You can't really paint them. Right. You know, you can paint wood cabinets mm-hmm. if you wanted to change the color. So I look at those kinds of things, and I know that you do too, because you're that type of contractor.
Yeah,
you look at the economic. Not necessarily the cheap yeah. way out, right, but it's about the budget and the economics of making sure that people are getting what they want. If you plan on selling the house in 2 years, look, let's do it this way to save you a lot of money rather than ripping the whole thing out, right?
That's exactly right. It's huge what you said with poles. We call them poles, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Term.
Sorry.
but on poles, it's amazing what that will change, and you don't realize it. So when you start off small, look at the smaller things that you can change, faucets, you know, do the small things. And, you know, it's amazing if you take a sink out and you put a new sink in and you put a new faucet on that sink and you change the poles out, you're talking, you know, maybe $600-$700 for all of that, or, you know, maybe $1,000 at tops. But that remodel right there is huge, and it'll change the entire look of your kitchen, and it'll change the way you feel about it, because it's all about feel. It really is. When you walk into your house and you look and you go, oh, man, you know, it's the same thing I've seen for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
just changing the knobs out, just changing the faucet out, just changing the little things is huge. You know, and paint a wall. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's amazing what that will do for your entire house. It'll brighten it up. It'll change the dynamic when you walk in. It's just the little things. I mean, you don't have to do a $50,000 remodel to make your house happy. You can do a $1,000 remodel and be just as happy because you've changed a ton just in the little things.
And keep that in mind when people are buying, you know, and not to ding any builders or any of that, but new construction is based on quantity. You know, they basically, everybody knows, it's no secret. You drive by a neighborhood, it's cleared out, all the trees are gone, and then like, with a huge exaggeration, 5 minutes later, there's 40 houses there, right. You know, in like what seems like a minute or in 2 days. So keep in mind that when you're dealing with a contractor, like, by the way, we're here, we're talking to Richard Whitney. He's with B&R Construction Services of Brevard here. He's a general contractor, been in this area for over 30 years, over 35 years, and certainly has the history here. So when you're talking to a general contractor, keep in mind that you're talking to somebody that really takes pride in building houses and remodeling and doing those types of things. And some of the builders are really more about quantity. Yes. So they hire, you know, laborers. They don't hire people who are in the construction business all the time necessarily. They're laborers to get jobs done, you know, to quick paint, to quick do those types of things. So does B&R Construction Services, for our listeners that are out there, do you provide that type of consultation that you would go in and somebody says, I really don't know what I want to get done, but this is my goal. This is what I want to have happen. Like I want my room to be brighter or I want my room to be, so it could be paint or it could be adding a window, right?
Absolutely.
So, but going through those things, do you offer those types of consultation services for people?
Absolutely. We come out and we actually, we'll go out and I don't charge for a visit. That would be unethical. That's just.
But as you know, Seven Brews is his favorite. So if you happen to have Seven Brews coffee, he won't turn it down.
I'll tell you what. If you tempt me with a Seven Brew, I'll have a Seven Brew. I'll be there in 10 minutes. But as I was telling Ellen and Allie first, I want to make your vision come true. The most economical way, because some people. Some of my older clients are on a fixed budget and they've done a savings their entire life and they don't want to blow it on a kitchen or a bathroom. They want to be able to still
buy the food to go into the kitchen.
Exactly, Ellen. But I'm extremely, and I say this, I'm not tooting a horn. I'm extremely ethical because I have to go to bed at night and I have to face God at the end of all this. Yes. And that's what I tell everybody. You know, you don't have to face God in your own world, but I have to face him in my world. Mm-hmm. So if I go into something and it's unethical or if I feel like I've done something wrong, I'm not going to be able to live with it. I mean, my wife and I actually gave back $7,200 on a budget that the lady paid up front, and there was $7,200 left over at the end. And we wrote her a check, and she started crying. Because she needed some certain things and she didn't have the money because she spent her whole budget, she thought. But when you do the right thing, the word of mouth comes around. Yeah. So this December, we'll be in business for 20 years. We started 2005, and I love what I do. I would not want to do anything else in my entire world. I love what I do. I love making people's visions come true and then making their dreams come true. And when they look at that kitchen or that bathroom or their bedroom or their tile at the end of the job, it's amazing. It gives me a sense of like, oh, goodness, it's nothing better. It's just nothing
better.
Well,
and you're just such a great part of the community, too. He does every year B&R Construction supports several families. They do the Santa break-in, they call it, or the Grinch break-in where they bring presents to challenged families. And it doesn't necessarily have to people that are not working or that are homeless or any of that. It's just in general, just families that are always struggling during the holidays. And so the community comes together because of B&R Construction Services of Brevard. They come together and they donate and they make this big event All your rider guys come out, you see all these presents, especially these big stuffed animals on the back of motorcycles. It's pretty funny bringing them to different homes and so forth. So, you know, the ethical part and the family part and the connect into the community is fantastic. But let me ask you one other question, because the price of materials went skyrocketing, right? So even when somebody says, I want to stay within a budget, it might still be a little heavier than what they anticipate.
It really is. And we try to keep how we've done it is we've got a team. I don't bid these things out. We built a team in the last 8 years. I built the right guys where they're all extremely ethical. We don't overcharge. And if there's something that we can do that's not typically part of the construction part, but it falls in our line, we try to take care of it without giving you an upcharge. I got probably the best electrician ever. He does so much for me. He adds things and he'll do things that, you know, if the client says, hey, I was kind of wondering if you could, and he comes in and he does that. And this is the same thing with all my guys. But materials, you aren't lying. They are crazy.
Yeah, the materials, that's what I thought too, right? That the materials had gotten like excessive. Drywall, concrete, all seemed to like blow out of the, and then I was like looking at the stock prices. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now, because it's a commodity. All that stuff is with the commodities. So there you go. You know, if you're looking for a remodel, make sure you're looking at the stock market, and you might see your prices fluctuate. Adjust accordingly.
Buy American, because tariffs are a thing.
Hey, amen, buy American.
I mean, I'm going to be honest about that. We are getting hit with tariffs on our end.
So we got a couple of minutes left, just a few minutes left. I also want to say that Rich and I are both in bands, working bands that are out. So he's not just a fantastic contractor, but he also is the manager, the band leader, the front guy for Eclectic Mess, which is a great band that's here in town and playing all over the place. And of course, you guys all hear it all week long that I play in the Phoenix band as well. But we were joking before the show. Harder to run a construction company, harder to run a band.
A band. So, all day long.
So there you have it, folks. The secret is out for sure. But if you are looking for remodel services or construction services, Rich and his team, Rich is a general contractor, licensed, bonded, insured general contractor here in town under B&R Construction Services of Brevard. Of course, we want to thank Greg Caporal from the St. Joseph's group for the education on the chapel that's down on Miller Street. Make sure you check that out if you haven't had a chance to go down there. The only historic marker in Brevard, in Palm Bay, I should say, not in Brevard, in the Palm Bay area. And you'll find lots of great information about that. And another, Allie, thanks again for joining me.
Oh, sure.
And Richard, thank you so much for coming all the way from Palm Bay and hanging out with us here in our Coco studio. We are here each and every Monday, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on 1510 WWBC. You can listen live. You can check out all of our social media as well as our website, sitamediainc.com. And you'll get all of our shows, all our bios, and everything is downloadable for your entertainment pleasure. Thank you so much. And Sita, we hope you have a safe travels back home, back to the United States. And we hope to see you next week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.